WASU FM Boone. WASURocks.com.
So it all comes down to this. 6 seconds to play in Super Bowl 34.
McNair drops, throws right side for Dyson. He dives for the end zone. He came up 1 yard short.
Down the middle, James, the lateral to the corner of the end zone. Can you believe that?
As Boone hits it to deep left, that might send the Yankees to the World Series.
Boise State for the win. They hand it off to Johnson. Boise State has won the Tostitos Fiesta Bowl. Can you believe it?
Chalmers for the tie.
Got it in 2 seconds.
They're going to kick the field goal. It'll be Jason and Gingell out of the hole to Mesko. Good snap. Good hold. And the kick is blocked. Appalachian State.
Last time on Sports Out the Wazoo.
If you have 25 wins in season, congratulations. That's a good job. But if you beat, you know, a bunch of no-name schools,
teams, then
yeah,
you get
then
garbage
you
result.
Know what? That's not really deserving of a seed.
There's probably like a soft cap. And if you're in the NCAA tournament selection, outside of teams that won their automatic bids, maybe what? I mean, maybe there's 8-10 mid-major teams that you're saying, I want to get these teams in.
Right now on the phones with us, Darren Gant from the Rock Hill Herald and also the Charlotte Observer.
Panthers and Peppers, the divorce has basically become official. Honestly, who's at fault here?
It's really hard to say that either side screwed this thing up. I mean, honestly, all any player wants, short of going to a Super Bowl and winning a championship, is to be a free agent.
And welcome to Sports Out the Wazoo, sponsored by Capone's, located across from the Turchin Center. 265-1886 is the number for Capone's. Brandon, Chris, Blake, Justin, and we have a lot to recap over the weekend. Seemed like it might not be that busy, but then the Winter Olympics obviously happened. NBA is obviously going on, and then obviously the NFL Combine too, with one of ASU's own involved in it as well.
Yeah, and honestly, I didn't really get to think about it. I was watching Sports Center this morning, and they kind of brought up the question. You know, what was the better event, the Olympics, in terms of the gold medal game, USA versus Canada, or the Super Bowl? And it got me thinking. It was like, you know what, this might be arguably the best sports weekend. I know it's still, once again, it's young, but I think it might have surpassed Super Bowl weekend in terms of all the stuff going on, the games, how great they were. It was a great weekend. Obviously, last night, yesterday evening, didn't necessarily turn out the way any American would have wanted, but that will go down, I think, in history as one of the top three hockey games ever played at any level.
It had everything you wanted. It had the epic goal. Obviously, it went the wrong way. Yeah. You know, overtime game is a gold medal game. It was a rematch of where U.S. won that game. And a lot of, you know what, there was a lot of critics, though, coming out on that side because they said, okay, yeah, the U.S. won it. They beat Canada, whatever, but they didn't deserve to win that game. So the U.S. almost came into that game saying, okay, well, we've got something to prove that we can try to beat them twice.
Still with a chip on their shoulder.
Yeah, and so, you know, it had that dynamic to that game. It had that intensity. It had a rivalry there that really hasn't been there in years past. So, it was nice to see. And also on top of that, it was nice to see that, yeah, I mean, if the U.S. went up against Russia or anything like that, of course, you know, it'd still be big. But just because Canada is Canada, they're, you know, they're right above us. They're in North America. It's that territory, that region that kind of gets us more amped up for the rivalry. We talked about it last week when he said, you know, it's kind of like U.S. playing Mexico in soccer. Sure, when we play Brazil or Germany, that's big time.
It's a big game, but
Mexico
is not
big.
A rivalry.
Yeah, it's not a rivalry, but this game wasn't, and you know what, it lived up to the billing.
Yeah, and you know what, I think this surpassed, I think, even any international rivalry we have or any international game that U.S. sports at any level has ever been involved with, because I think it was so interesting, and Jeremy Schapp, who I love Jeremy Schapp. I used to love Dick Schapp when Dick Schapp was alive. Jeremy Schapp, he's a great writer. He's a great storyteller. You might not like his opinions all the time. You might not like what he has to say all the time, but the guy's a great storyteller. And yesterday morning on SportsCenter, they ran a piece about what this team meant to America. And I know a lot of Americans still didn't embrace it necessarily as much as 1980 and the miracle on ice at Lake Placid. But if you look back to what other teams we've embraced, okay, the Dream Team, let's use that as a benchmark. You couldn't exactly rally around the Dream Team. In fact, if you were being completely honest and you looked at it objectively, you should probably be pretty embarrassed by the Dream Team because of what they did to other countries. We were so much more dominant than other countries. It was almost embarrassing that we'd blow out in Angola by 60 points in the Olympics. It was one of those things where it wasn't a rallying point. It wasn't one of those things where, man, that really uplifts me to watch us throw down on a country that can't even compare to us in a sport. This was a sport where we were underdogs. We weren't given a chance. Once it wasn't compared to 1980 because these are still professionals. But if you talk to all the analysts and all the talking heads all weekend long, we talked to Greg Wyshynski last week, and he said, "Nope, I don't think so. I don't see." And he's an American, and he said he didn't see Team USA meddling. I'm an American. I watch a lot of hockey. I didn't see Team USA meddling. And so it was one of those things where once it started happening, a lot of people embraced it, and it was uplifting because of all the stuff that our country's been going through, a bad economy. We're at war. There's a lot of people dying. But this is one of those things that brings people together. It sounds so cliche. And for at least a weekend, it really seemed like, you know what, we can do the impossible.
Well, you know what, and that you kind of touched on it in the fact that you said you have to have an underdog philosophy or something. There has to be some element. With the Dream Team, you knew what you had.
It was domination.
Yeah, it was just complete and total domination. So that wasn't anything new. You expected that.
Yeah.
But with the U.S. hockey team, you didn't expect anything. I mean, like we said, none of us really expected them to medal or anything like that. It was just, hey, be competitive out there. Just try
your
best.
They were so young, so much energy out there, getting after it, being aggressive out there. And it was
years down the road, maybe we'll be good. But that wasn't the case. And then as each win kind of started
that's
them
the,
out.
That's what the coach was saying. They didn't want to prepare this team to win gold in 2014. He wanted to win gold this year. And everybody was like, well, yeah, whatever.
Well, and I think that's
high aspirations, but still.
I think that's the other side of this, too, is the fans and us and the Americans and the casual observer said they didn't stand a chance. But these players went into these games believing that it was gold or bust. And so why every Canadian, whether they were a player, a fan, an innocent bystander, they believed and understood and thought and expected Team Canada would win the gold.
They expected a Dream Team type performance from Canada.
In USA, it was only the players that believed that. And so I think at the same time, that's why we can't overplay this game. I think we can overplay this game in terms of how it was played. If you look at this objectively, once again as a game, I think this game will go down as one of the greatest of all times. So it's really interesting. We're going to be joined by Kevin Weeks, former Carolina Hurricane, if that name sounds familiar to you. He's now working with CBC. He is a Canadian, so I'm sure he's a little bit happy today.
We won't put it too much past him since he was a Hurricane.
He works with Don Cherry out there, Hockey Night in Canada, the Don Cherry. Did you see him on NBC last night? Unbelievable. His loud suit, bright red suit, had the Canadian flag out of his mind. He picked Canada 5-3. Wasn't the score, but he did get it right. So we'll be talking with Kevin Weeks and his thoughts on the Olympics in just a few minutes and get what he has to say on the importance of this game. And also, I guess, my question to both of you guys, how does this carry over? Because to me, I'm a hockey fan. I love hockey no matter. This was hockey heaven for me.
Yeah.
I've never seen a level of hockey.
I mean, that was an amazing hockey tournament in general.
Exactly.
You'll be hard-pressed to find an entire tournament that was better than that.
I agree, but at the same time, this is what I say. This is NHL hockey. I mean, the NHL is filled with these sort of superstars. Ironically enough, the two teams that were composed entirely of NHL players were the ones that were in the gold medal match in Canada and USA. No amateurs, no semi-professionals in other leagues out in Europe. They were all NHL players. So my question to you is, do you guys now want to watch more hockey? And are you going to be more likely to watch the NHL?
If it's on, I'm not going to immediately turn it anymore.
But is that so that's different from where you stood 3 weeks ago?
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah, it's less reluctance to not say, okay, what else is on?
I'll give it an effort from now on.
Yeah.
What did you guys like? Let me ask this, because I know you guys aren't just huge hockey fans.
No.
What did you like about hockey? What did you like about these Olympics that stood out to you and said, man, this game is addicting. Well, I got
to
watch this.
To be honest, it's really cliche, but I like the fact that they fought for their country and they went out there knowing that they represented their country and they were out there. They were young guys that they, we have the older crew that we said, you already had your shot at this, so we're going let the next generation come through. And they went out there. They were aggressive. They knew that they were under the dog. They were the underdog. And I just like the way they played, to be honest.
Well, you know what? I think that this tournament brought out a little bit of everything. You saw slaughterings. You saw come-from-behind wins. You saw overtime games. You saw tough matchups. You saw rivalries. You saw chippiness. You saw fights.
I wanted to see a fight. So
yeah.
I mean, you can't find an international point.
I know you can't, but I wanted to see
you saw a lot of aggressive play, and I think you saw a little bit of everything that you wanted. If you're a hockey fan, or if you're somebody just starting to get interested in it or possibly want to watch it, then I think you saw what you need to see to kind of see what the elements of hockey really are. And that's the fact, too, that I think Mike and Mike touched on it this morning a little bit about, hey, you know, sometimes you watch a fight and a hockey game breaks out.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes fans get too carried away with just the fighting, and that's the reason it draws them in.
I think the casual fans do, yes.
Yeah, but if you're, you know, if you're a true fan and if you really want to follow hockey, it's the intensity that the game offers.
Yeah.
The fights come out of that intensity and the competitiveness, but overall, I think you had a little bit of everything because you had the U.S., you know, just blasting Finland. Yeah, you had that USA-Canada game, both games, really. The first game, which they won, which was an epic win, and then the second one, the gold medal
just
game.
Just a sea of red in the crowd.
It was incredible. So it had a little bit of everything to offer you that. It wasn't just boring or just the same amount of games every single time.
Because, Epis, I know you know nothing about hockey. You don't watch hockey at all. You're an NBA guy.
Wow.
You're
cut
an NFL. No, it's true. He doesn't watch hockey.
Not very often.
It's true. What are your thoughts?
You're an ignorant hockey
fan. I don't either. You didn't say that about me.
Well, I think it kind of added more of the international standpoint, just really how it became, because of the fact that, you know, players, we know so much about the NHL players and thinking, oh, they're from the United States. But Crosby and Ovechkin, the two players for Canada that I know, it just added that international standpoint to it, and I think that can help fans adapt more because, you know, not every sport is just Americans.
No, and I think it's interesting because I agree with you. We live in a globalized economy now. We live in a globalized world. Everything, we're all connected no matter where we live. And honestly, if you look at every team in the NHL and every country, every team was loaded with at least 2 to 3 stars, and not just good players. I mean stars. I mean, I don't care if you're talking about Sweden with Henrik Lundqvist in goal. I don't care if you're talking about Finland when you get a guy like Tuomo Ruutu, or you get all their players they have in Jari Lehtinen. I mean, they're just loaded with players. And so I think that's what, like you said, the international, I think it's a stark contrast from the way the NBA is built, but it's a little bit interesting.
Yeah, you know what, and I also look at the fact also, too, that when you look at some of these stars for the Americans, well, when you were kind of talking about, well, what all do you, you know, are you going to watch hockey a little bit more? I think we will for the fact that sometimes if we hear a Ryan Miller
or
something,
you know, Patrick Kane or something.
Yeah, well, somebody like that, then we're like, oh, okay, yeah, I remember him. That's that guy.
This is what I say. I was once in your guy's shoes about maybe, I don't know, 5-10 years ago. Even probably not until like 5 years ago was I really a diehard hockey fan, where hockey really started to become my favorite sport. I was once in a place where, yeah, hockey's interesting. I keep up with it. I watch the scores on SportsCenter. I know who some of the best players are. But once you get into it, once you start watching games, going to a hockey game is like none other. I guarantee you, if either of you have ever been to a Carolina Hurricanes game or any NHL game, you go to an NHL game and you can't get enough. It's my favorite live sporting event. It doesn't even come close to translating on live TV. It's not even close. But this is why I think hockey is the best sport in all the world. Because when you think about it, there's some things about other sports that don't make it stand out. Hockey, scoring is rare, so when a goal happens, that it seems like such an event. But it's not so rare, like in soccer, that you get games where it's barely ever scores, where it's 1-0. Scoring is so rare that it's rare enough that it's precious, but it's not so rare that it seems like, oh, it's out of the question, we'll never see a goal. So I think that makes it interesting. You talk about the athleticism of these guys who are 6'3", 6'6", 200-and-something pounds. Zdeno Chara is probably the most toned and conditioned athlete in all of the world, and he plays hockey. He's 6'6", and he's on skates. I mean, it's remarkable, these guys. And then also you talk about the level of pace, the speed. It's got everything you like in other sports all wrapped up into one. It's amazing to me.
Yeah, you know what, and that's a good point too, because a lot of these guys too, they're very well conditioned. They're great athletes, and you know what, I found a little bit more love for hockey over the past couple weeks. You know,
it's not
going to
happen overnight.
It's not an overnight deal. It's not going to replace football or basketball or baseball. But you know, if it can come in under fourth as a good
actually,
alternate,
it
sport,
may go then back up to the Big Four now instead of just the Big Three.
Yeah. So who knows? But we've got Kevin Weeks on the phone now, so we're going to go ahead and talk to him about that U.S.-Canada game as well. Joining us now on Sports Out the Wazoo is former Carolina Hurricane and analyst for CBC Hockey Night in Canada and the NHL Network, Kevin Weeks. Kevin, how are you doing?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm doing great. Well, you know, after the last 2 weeks of hockey, it feels like that we're kind of on a high from all this great competition, and now it seems like we kind of flatlined that we're going to crash here soon.
Understandably so, but, you know, the hockey was great, obviously. The level of play was terrific. The creativity was terrific. So many good young players that are going to be excellent NHL players. Some are going to be stars for years to come. So there's really a lot to be excited about. I know it wasn't the result that a lot of you down south of the border are looking for, but I would have said the same thing had Canada lost. You know, I just think overall I think it's great for the game. And to see this type of young talent on display and the level of play that these young men showed throughout this tournament was just fantastic.
Well, if I can just get you to take your broadcaster hat off for just a second and just be a Canadian, because I know you're proud this morning. What was it like? What was the feeling when you saw Sidney Crosby go 5-hole on Ryan Miller and to score that game-winning goal?
Well, I'll tell you, to be honest with you, I was pretty neutral the whole time. And obviously, you know, being from Canada and being raised here and living here, I wanted to see Canada do well, but I do have a couple friends on the U.S. team, so it was really the best of both scenarios. It could have gone either way for me. I'm just happy that the game was that entertaining and it was that close. And, I mean, overall, just the feeling of euphoria here in Canada was through the roof. You would have thought that the Leafs won the Stanley Cup. It's probably as close as it's been to that type of a celebration, at least here in Toronto. And I remember celebrating when the Jays won both World Series and going down in Yonge Street. So it was pretty similar. It was a pretty similar scene to that. And, you know, I think if you go all across the country from coast to coast, pretty much everybody had that type of excitement. So it was a big thing. It was a huge moment in history. It was definitely a game for the ages, as Jonathan Toews said of Team Canada. He called it a game for the ages. And he was right. You know, 30, 50, 60 years from now, the way people revel about the miracle on ice, and deservedly so, people will be doing the same thing about this game.
Coming into these Olympics, expectations were low for this U.S. hockey team, but then after they were able to get to the gold medal game, seemed like that expectations kind of amped up. Were they able to achieve a little bit more respect with the fact that they were able to get to this gold medal game and provide such an exciting contest?
Doesn't that sound eerily familiar to the Carolina Hurricanes to you?
Yeah, it does.
I mean, it was the same thing for us in 02 that year, and obviously then when they came back and won the cup in 06, I believe it was. So it was that type of similar feeling where, yeah, their expectations were low of Team USA. There were a lot of so-called experts and naysayers out there that said they should have had a lot more veteran group, a lot of guys that have served the group for so long and that have been members of Team USA for so long. But Brian Burke took a different approach, and I think he took an approach that's similar with the structure of NHL teams today. It's a younger players league. The new CBA, which is not so new anymore, but with the current CBA in place post-lockout, it's become that type of league. And I think Brian Burke embraced that, and his Team USA that he put together reflected that. And, you know, it truly is a remarkable accomplishment for hockey all across the world, but especially in the States. It was just terrific. As I said, Zach Parise, who I played with in New Jersey for 2 years, is a terrific, terrific kid and a great player. He's the most underrated superstar in the NHL, as I always say, and he proved that in this tournament. Patrick Kane was fantastic. Johnson & Johnson on the blue line, Jack Johnson and Eric Johnson, respectively, for Team USA. I mean, it's only going to get better. And what else can you say about Ryan Miller? Like, yeah, he carried that team on his shoulders, and he's a pretty lean and skinny guy, but he carried that team. He was a horse. He was a stud that whole tournament. So I think the future is bright for Team USA from a hockey standpoint. I think it's only going to continue to evolve and get better, and there's a lot to be excited about. As a hockey fan, former player, and an analyst, you know, there's a lot for me to be excited about for Team USA hockey.
Well, if we can spin this forward, I mean, obviously, looking forward to the 2014 games in Sochi, Russia, it's not guaranteed that NHL players are going to play in those Olympics. I mean, if you're Gary Bettman right now, and I know you're not, I mean, it's easy to role play, but if you're Gary Bettman, you got to find a way to get your players back involved in these games, right?
There's absolutely no question about it. You know, you have to look at it from a wide-angle lens. You can't just look at it from the standpoint of, okay, well, it was on North American soil here in Vancouver. It's convenient. It made sense. So that's why we're doing it. You know, you have to look at the big picture. More to the point that we're just making about how how much of a, you know, a celebration this should be for worldwide hockey fans, not only just the impact that it had here in Canada and or in the U.S. So you put that hat on and you say, hey, you know, it's about continuing to grow and develop our sport, have more of an impact internationally, have more of an impact at the grassroots level all across the world. So participation levels will be up. And I think that's the way you have to look at it. You know, there's no better platform to do that. There's hardly any other vehicle out there that's able to capture everybody's attention at one time other than sport, be it the World Cup of Soccer and or in this case the Olympics. The Olympics is the one thing in the world that transforms time, gender, everything, you name it. Everybody gets fixated. There's 3 billion people watching, and that's pretty tough to beat. You want to have your players showcased there.
You're listening to Sports Out the Wazoo. Chris Kroger, Brandon Dixon. We're hanging out with Kevin Weeks, former Carolina Hurricane, now an analyst for CBC Hockey Night in Canada, also the NHL Network on the fly. Kevin, also continuing this conversation when you continue to spin it forward in terms of this was the highest rating sporting event in modern U.S. history recently. I mean, it's beat every Major League World Series since 2004, every NCAA Final Four since 98. I mean, you name it, it crushed them. How do you continue to get the fan interest in hockey, not just in international play in the Olympics, but over to the NHL?
Well, I mean, you know, I played in the States for 14 years. I lived in the U.S. for the last 14 years. And, you know, speaking from my own personal experience, I think you have to build off the momentum that you just generated from this Olympics. And I think one of the key things is going back to the grassroots. I'm always a big believer of that. I'm a big supporter of that wherever I've played and here at home in Toronto with minor hockey. I think that's the most critical step, because once you have kids hooked, then, you know, it's only a matter of time that your parents and your guardians and your, you know, your siblings, it becomes a family affair and everybody's on deck, pardon me, in terms of supporting you. And, you know, you look at the kids from Team USA last night, you want to call them kids, but it was only, in some cases, 5 years ago, some of those kids were still playing minor hockey. So you have to take care of your feeder system, and that's why I mentioned the grassroots. So continuing to grow the game at that level, expose as many people as possible from as many different demographics as possible to the game. You know, that's one thing that you could say about football. You know, it doesn't matter if you're a grandma in Wisconsin or, you know, if you're a running back coming out of Compton, you know, Los Angeles or California. Everybody, there's so many people in the States that are really, really interested in the game of football and the game of baseball. And, you know, that really goes a long way. So for hockey, we've been kind of regionalized for a long time, especially here in Canada. You know, we have the expectation that everybody's going to embrace the game that we do, but it doesn't work that way. You have to go out and attract new kids to play and attract families. And, you know, over time, you continue doing that, then, you know, that it's going to speak for itself. And you'll then reap the benefits at the corporate level, you know, in terms of corporate partners, et cetera, because naturally you'll have more reach. So I think sports is one of the great things that has the ability to do that. You know, it's not, you know, it, globalization is so important right now, where you can't just regionalize the value of a sport or the impact or the participation of a sport. You know, you need to continue growing that. The NBA has done a fantastic job. They're probably the leaders of that in terms of what they've done for the game globally. And I know you guys down in Carolina love your hoops.
Yeah, that's right.
And you deservedly so. You know, that's really the one of the main heartlands of basketball in the world. But, you know, from that, you use that as a springboard, and now there's, you know, you look at Manu Ginobili, for example, out of Argentina playing for the Spurs, and so with Pau Gasol and his brother Mark that came from Spain, and all that is spawned from, you know, a place like Carolina, for example. So I think we have to continue to do the same thing with our sport, continue growing it, diversifying it, and I think we'll continue to enjoy the benefits that our sport has to offer that we know, but more importantly, other people who are quote-unquote non-traditional hockey fans will continue to embrace it. And you guys know, like down in Carolina, we experienced that firsthand. We experienced that firsthand, and a so-called non-traditional hockey market has just somehow made it to the Stanley Cup twice in its short history and won it in one of those two times. So that speaks volumes, and that, you know, you look at the support down there, you look at the fans, and I played a lot of different places, and I can tell you, playing in the playoffs, there's no place like playing at the RBC Center in the NHL, and a lot of opposing players will tell you the same thing.
You know, there's a little bit of a hockey renaissance taking place right now. Do you see an expansion internationally in the game of hockey?
Well, I definitely say it's a renaissance. I mean, you look at certain franchise, you look at Pittsburgh Penguins, there's definitely a renaissance of the Penguins, and obviously everybody knows what they were in the 90s and early 2000s with Mario Lemieux at the time. But now with Sidney Crosby, Malkin, Ryan Whitney, like you have so many different players that have played there. And they actually, it wasn't that long ago that franchise was in trouble. And Mario Lemieux rescued that franchise as an owner. And it's now one of the most stable franchises in the league. They're moving into a great new green eco-friendly building within the next year and a half, which is going to be great. So there's a renaissance right there in Pittsburgh. Same thing happened with the transformation in Chicago. Obviously, you know, you fans out there, Team USA fans, with Patrick Kane, for example, Duncan Keith, you know, they have all these young stars playing on their team, and United Center is all of a sudden, it's jammed. You can't get a ticket. And that arena is huge. It seats like 22, 23,000 people. And that's the hottest ticket in Chicago right now, and it has been for the last 2-3 years. So you look at a renaissance there. So Minnesota is always strong. You have tons of kids that come out of there, great programs at every level. So I definitely think there's a lot of growth and development in the game. And, you know, for me, I'm always a big thinker and a creative thinker, and I wouldn't be surprised eventually at some point when all things are right to make it happen. I wouldn't be surprised to see an international expansion. It wouldn't surprise me in the least. I think there's a lot of value there, potentially speaking, if the terms are met. And I think when you look at the makeup of a lot of the players in the league, you know, a lot of players come from pretty diverse backgrounds, more so than people recognize. And obviously you have your European players who are European and maybe come directly from Russia and or from Czech Republic or Sweden. But even if you look at Team Canada, Roberto Luongo, like myself, he's a first-generation Canadian, and his parents both came from Italy. And he just got introduced to the game here. So I think there's a lot of opportunity. There's a lot of synergy. I just think there's going to have to continue to be more growth and exploration of that international expansion. And it's something that could definitely happen in time.
Kevin, I appreciate you taking the time to talk to us. I know you're a busy guy. Once again, Kevin Weeks, former Carolina Hurricane. You can catch him on CBC Hockey Night in Canada, also on the NHL Network on the fly. And Kevin, I'll get you out of here on this. I can't let you forget. You gave us lots of great memories here in Carolina as a Hurricane.
Thank you.
Still do hold the record for playoff shutouts with 2 back in 2002 during that cup run. So still making your mark as a Hurricane, buddy.
Thanks a lot. Thanks a lot. I look to catch up with those guys. I know they're coming here to play the Leafs, I think, on Wednesday. So I'm going to try to catch up with a couple guys tomorrow.
All right. Appreciate it, Kevin.
No problem. Thanks for having me, Chris.
There you go, Kevin Weeks, former Carolina Hurricane goaltender during that 2002 magical Stanley Cup run. We got to take a break when we get back right here, Sports Out the Wazoo. We'll be talking some NCAA hoops. A new number one, Syracuse. I've been talking about them for weeks. They're finally at the top. A huge win over Villanova over the weekend. Also a big win for ASU hoops. We'll talk about maybe their chances making the NCAA tournament. Also some NFL talk. Armani Edwards, Tim Tebow at the combine over the weekend. And we also got some NBA talk to get into later. It's more Sports Out the Wazoo coming back next right here. 90.5 WASU, WASURocks.com.
Hello. You're listening to Sports Out the Wazoo. The phone lines are open, 828-264-4905.
Welcome back to Sports Out the Wazoo, as always, sponsored by Capone's, located across from the Turchin Center. 265-1886 is the number for Capone's.
Yeah, these guys how they open up their hips when they're making these
making
moves. Because these are sort of things that translate to the NFL. Does the drill itself? No, but the fundamentals behind the drill do, and so that's what people are looking for.
The only part I hate, really, is that some people just get too hung up on those stats.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, Tim Tebow had a 38-inch vertical, and Sam Bradford only had 32 inches.
Yeah, so. I mean, it's not worth anything more than what we're making of it right now. Yeah. It's not worth more than anything than
I don't
than
feel like anybody here is investing it too much in it.
Well, no. What the other thing I'd like to see is Steve Smith even alluded to this a few years back. He said, is it going to happen? No, absolutely not, because people want to see the 40-yard dashes without any equipment or anything on. But he's like, if you really want to truly see how a player's going to play, put him in the pads and helmet and get him out there to run a 40-yard dash to really see how fast he is, or really get him out there in those drills, because that's really going to be how it goes. Because you could have a guy that's running a 4-2 4.2, but you put 25 pounds of equipment on him, he's not going to be running a 4.2 40.
Yeah.
You know, that's a case in point. So, you know, it's a different thing. Plus, the other thing I'd like to see is them run with a football. I mean, I'd like to see how they actually run with the football, because that slows you down too sometimes. You know, it all depends.
Yeah.
So.
It's interesting. I mean, it's all about what you make out of it. And I think a lot of the scouts, they don't look into it as much as the media pretends that they look into it.
Yeah, I think it's just something we used to talk about.
Yeah.
I guess really they put that much stock in it.
Another thing coming out of the combine, and we probably don't have time to talk about this today. We can save it for Wednesday. But overtime rules, there is a proposed change. We'll talk about that on Wednesday, because I think there's a good discussion there. So it's a little interesting what's
You're
going on
try
there.
To tinker with something
I don't
else,
like
man.
It. I mean, I'll just leave
either.
It at that. We'll get into it on Wednesday. But I think the NFL overtime is fine.
Yeah, you know what? And Roger Goodell, I think he's a quality guy, but I do not like him as
no,
NFL commissioner.
He seems to be trying to do a little bit too much all at the same time. He's got his hand everywhere.
Yeah, he's kind of got like a power trip. He's almost micromanaging the NFL,
yeah.
And I don't like it.
Hands off, laissez-faire.
Yeah. Paul Tagliabue, bring him
economics?
Back. Tagliabue, I like that name.
Unbelievable.
Paul Tagliabue.
Switching gears, in Charlotte there was some big news. Broke late Friday night, right around 2 o'clock in the morning, that Michael Jordan...
I think you found out right when this happened.
I did. So that's the beauty of Twitter. If yeah. you're on Twitter, you get stuff right when it happens. Mike Cranston of the AP, of the Associated Press, broke the news. He covers Charlotte sports, Bobcats, Panthers, Charlotte 49ers, racing, all that stuff in Charlotte for the Associated Press. He broke the news, and basically, Michael Jordan will be the new majority/controlling owner. And there is a difference there, and we'll talk about that just for a moment. But of the Bobcats, good move, or would you rather see Postolos, the ownership group he had from Houston, coming by?
I mean, I think, you know, anytime you can have Michael Jordan as a head, that's where you want to go. That's who the team wanted. And plus, if you have Postolos come in, then he probably wipes out the whole board.
Yeah.
Is that a good plan? Is that a bad plan?
He's
I don't know.
Deeper pockets. I mean, that's one for them.
Yeah, that's definitely one thing. But at the same time, you're looking
Jordan
for name. Yeah. If
no.
you're Charlotte, you're looking for stability. You're looking for something, not more chaos.
Publicity.
And I think that would also add to the chaos.
Because that's you love the NBA. What do you think?
Like you guys said, I mean, anybody who even doesn't know the NBA knows Michael Jordan.
Yeah.
So, and he's got friends that probably have way deeper pockets
he's
than anybody
else. Got friends in all
else.
The right places.
Exactly. So, far as money and the recruiting standpoint, well, I mean, goodness.
Well, let's not forget, he originally tried to buy a share of the Charlotte Hornets a few years ago, about a decade ago.
George Shin.
He wanted to keep the team here in Charlotte, but it never happened.
Could have had the Hornets here.
Shin didn't sell, and, you know, that's history. So, I agree with both of you guys, all of you guys. I think there is an importance there, because I think you keep the team rooted here. The other interesting thing, which at the time I didn't believe, but now it's since come out that, once again, as I alluded to earlier, there's a difference between majority owner, which is at least 51% ownership of any asset. That's the way majority is defined. And so in economics, I don't know what you want to call it, in finance. But controlling ownership is different. And controlling ownership is the one that actually controls everything. I mean, it is what it sounds like. But controlling ownership and majority ownership aren't one and the same. And in the NBA, you only have to own 15% of the asset itself, of the team, to have controlling ownership. And so it seemed like, okay, Michael Jordan, he got an ownership group together. His share is only 15%, but he's the controlling owner, and his group is the majority owner. So it worked together. It's since come out that this is basically all MJ's money. He had a hard time finding some investors. They're saying he spent almost next to $250 million of his own money. Of course, the NBA, they have some agreements with some banks. You can loan $150 million.
To that, I have to say
business.
Just one thing. Yo, MJ, hook me up.
Yeah, that's right. Jordan Brand. I mean, I guess if you're hooked up with Nike, you got to be pulling in some serious cash, right?
I mean, he's been pulling cash since, what, like 85?
Yeah.
Man's been raking in the dough for 25 years. He's pretty well off.
It's going to be interesting. The other
your own brand of the biggest clothing.
Everybody loves their own brand. So.
Yeah. He's like his own god.
Anybody?
Tennis shoes.
Austin Powers? Anybody?
Yeah. Everybody likes their own brand.
That's right. There you go. Got the illusion right there. The other interesting side Jordan. Of this is, should they change the name? Because there's an uproar. And on CharlotteObserver.com, the Charlotte Observer's webpage, they had a poll, and I know this is unscientific, 76% of the pollers said yes.
Yeah.
That's a stark contrast.
That's because
right
we all voted
nobody
for the flight.
Wanted Bobcats
for
in the first
flight.
Place.
Yeah. Stupid Bob Johnson didn't listen to his fans.
Well,
why nobody wanted to go to the
what
games.
Do you like?
Hey, you know, flight. I like the flight. It makes sense. It's not only do you have, you know, first in flight, that works with it. You have a big hub there of airlines with
Jordan
in Charlotte. King. You got Jordan, you know.
Well, we got eight people in this room right now. Let's get a vote. Should they change the name from Bobcats to some hands in the air? What do we see?
Yeah.
That's unanimous. We have eight people voting, all eight people. I don't mind the Bobcats. It's grown on me. But if you're the owner, you got to make it your own team, right?
Change the name, the colors, everything.
And change the prices.
Jordan already has a shoe called the Flight.
He does. The Flight 23. That is a brand of his shoes.
And maybe they'll have
so many
connections.
Maybe they're
calling the 23s.
Also, the one, I don't mind
everybody
the Bobcats. I don't like
that?
The colors. The blue,
I hate the colors.
The blue and the orange. Everybody wears blue. There's like 13 teams
on the orange is repulsive. The orange is repulsive.
Let's wear green and purple. Look like a bunch of dinosaurs out there.
Maybe we could get the name and colors back from the Hornets. You never know.
Hey, I would love it.
Like you said, Jordan's got enough money.
Hey, that's the only type of purple I ever liked. When it was with that teal and blue, that was the only time I ever liked it.
Okay, switcheroo. Utah used to be in New Orleans. Get the Jazz to go back to the New Orleans name. So New Orleans Jazz. Utah gets a new name that fits being in the middle of, I don't know, let's say a giant mountain range, not the Jazz, and then also get the Hornets to now go back to Charlotte. So it's the Charlotte Hornets.
I say the Utah Mailmen's or something. We'll name it after Carl.
The Utah Sloans.
Yeah. Utah, well, he's been
we'll
there long enough.
It's a work in progress.
Unbelievable. Hey, if you want to hit us up, get us on Facebook and Twitter, facebook.com/sportsoutthewazoo.
We need to put a fan vote up.
Yeah, I'd love to get some response from people because I think it should happen. Out of time, though, real quick, because that was checklist time. Let's go, buddy. Please.
I think the Flight would be an awesome name.
Flight's good.
The
I like it. Could you imagine the logo?
Would that not be awesome? I mean, it works for everything. You could go any direction with that, and it would work perfectly.
So many options.
All right, fellas.
Jordan could make his logo, the Jumpman logo, the Flight logo.
You're right.
And then,
like it already is.
And then he would just rake
I could
the
talk
money.
For hours about this.
Yeah. He wouldn't have to worry about money, that's for sure.
Like he is already. Today in 1961, JFK established the Peace Corps. So just a little off thing, nonprofit. I just thought it was nice.
A lot of people like to, you know, once they graduate, they're just like, yeah, I'll sign up.
Say
for
whatever, I'll just go.
Yeah, well, yeah. Go to Africa.
Today in 1969, Mickey Mantle retired. Oh. Would that make you guys sad?
Who's that guy?
Mickey Mantle. How could you not like
just
the mixer?
You know it, man.
Next stop.
Just hating. Today in 1972,
favorite Yankee.
Wilt Chamberlain became the first NBA player to score 30,000 points.
He also became the first NBA player to score 30,000 women.
Yeah.
Oh.
So and you know what? That's been missed.
So he
Anybody
says.
Get a drum roll? Anybody? There you go.
Burn. Today in 1979, the NCAA granted ESPN exclusive rights to telecast collegiate events. I didn't know ESPN has been around that long.
Around for a while.
They had the wide world of sports, and it was more like the wide world of suckiness that you just find. It's like a backyard of terrible
ping pong,
sports.
Beach volleyball, you name it.
Now we're going to go to cliff diving. Take it away.
The exciting sports. Today in 1993, an NHL expansion team got their name, the Mighty Ducks. But the thing about it, I didn't know they were owned by Disney.
Yeah, of course. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I remember the movie.
DeWalt owns everyone.
Where do you think that
Disney owns you.
Anaheim, the Anaheim Angels were owned by Disney as well.
The Jonas Brothers are like the disciples of Disney.
Ironically enough, they're no longer owned by Disney. That's why they took away that Mighty Ducks name. They're now the Anaheim Ducks. I don't like it. I can't get used to it.
Disney's not mighty anymore.
I like the movie better.
I agree.
Yeah. So some drama. Kim Kardashian, not really drama, actually exciting for Kim Kardashian. Her $4.8 million new house closes tomorrow. And she's moving in Beverly Hills.
You know what else is cool? She was in NASCAR in Las Vegas over the weekend. She had her own car with her own name and website, all that stuff, in a NASCAR race. That's Kim Kardashian for
you. Can we ever get off Kardashians, please?
Reggie Bush has been a part of the whole buying process and everything like that.
Yeah, yeah.
You guys trying to move in with him?
Who are we moving in with?
Sure.
I mean, I like Kardashian, Reggie. I like Reggie. Reggie. Kim rubs me a little raw. I don't know if I can live with that.
She's cute,
though.
Does she
know?
Oh, Zippy.
She's something.
Reel it in.
ABC is unveiling its official list of competitors for Dancing with the Stars. If you got invited to the show, who would you dance with? Not a dude. Please don't tell me.
No, he's on the show, though.
I don't know. I don't know who's on the show. Yeah. I don't know.
I mean, it doesn't matter. No, if you could pick any girl to dance with, who would it be?
I know. I kind of like Carrie Underwood.
I would say Carrie Underwood would be nice.
Hey, you can't steal mine.
Okay, Brooklyn Decker. There you go.
Okay.
Bam. Right there. Right at you.
Blake?
What?
He's not even paying attention.
Marissa Miller.
Blake's still saying, I'd bring Chad Ochocinco. What are you talking about?
Marissa Miller.
We'd be awesome.
I don't know. It's a close call between Jennifer Aniston and Angelina Jolie. I just can't decide.
Jennifer Aniston, she's past her heyday.
Let's do the polka.
That's an opinion.
She's out of
a river dance.
Hey, you could teach Chad Ochocinco how to contra dance. They teach you enough around here.
Unbelievable. Chad Ochocinco, I guess watch out for him in Dancing on the Stars. Because Kazep is good as always with the checklist. Buddy, we're out of time. We'll be back on Wednesday. Lots of stuff to get into. Big thanks to Kevin Weeks. You can check him out, kevinweeks1.com on the internet.
Can we actually have a Wednesday show without the snow?
We'll try. 2 weeks in a row. It's been a while. You can also check him out online, twitter.com/KevinWeeks. It's that simple.
Just like that.
Yeah, exactly.
You get to know him.
You can check us out on Twitter and Facebook.com. Also, head on over to WASURocks/SportsOutTheWazoo. Like I said, we'll be back on Wednesday. Check out the podcast as well. See you guys on the other side.